Okay, well, thanks to the previous speaker for describing the California strawberry production system, so I don't have to do any of that. Instead, I'm going to focus on an alternative to soil fumigants for controlling soil-borne diseases, and that's called anaerobic soil disinfestation, which I will now refer to as ASD. And I want to acknowledge that this is the work of a large group of people at this point, and I'm just happen to be the one presenting. Also, I want to acknowledge the funding from USDA and from the California Strawberry Commission, who have supported this work for a number of years now. And all the work you'll see pretty much is done in grower fields. So we've been very dependent on the willingness of growers to experiment with this technique over the years. So just to give you an idea, various kinds of anaerobic soil disinfestation techniques have been tested in a number of different countries. The idea was initially developed in Japan and the Netherlands independently. And as you can see from this table, it's been applied to a variety of different crops, usually high-value specialty crops, for controlling a whole range of pathogens. And this is not a complete list by any means. What I want to draw your attention to is in the numbers in red in terms of commercial use. In California in 2011, we had 3 acres being tested in ASD. In fall of 2014, that was up to over 1,000 acres. So growers are adopting this technique almost faster than we can keep up with them in terms of being able to give the best advice in terms of whether the technique will work in their particular situation or for their particular disease complex. But this is often the case. Researchers are running up from behind. So what is ASD? Well, it's basically a very simple process where you provide an organic carbon source for soil microbes to feed on, cover the soil with an oxygen impermeable tarp, and then irrigate to saturation or just above field capacity and maintain the soil at field capacity or above for a period of time, which creates anaerobic conditions and stimulates the anaerobic decomposition of the added carbon. And so this is what it looks like in the field. Farmers have different ways of applying the material, but there you can see it being spread with a compost spreader. You spread it, incorporate it in the soil, shape the beds, cover with a tarp, and irrigate. And we usually allow the process to go on for 3 weeks, which is about the same as a plant back time after fumigation in California. So the timing actually works pretty well for the system the way it is currently. So I won't give you a whole lot of data from many years of field trials, but I just want to summarize what we have found up until a couple of years ago. That basically, over 7 replicated field trials in different regions, we got between 85 and 110% strawberry yields that we got with soil fumigants. And those fumigants were either methyl bromide and chloropicrin mix, or chloropicrin on its own, or with telone. It varied. Typically, we applied 3 to 4 acre inches of water during the 3 weeks of ASD, which is a point I'll come back to. Most of the fields we had, if they had any disease, it was Verticillium dahliae. Oops, it's telling me I'm taking too long. And we could get 80 to 100% decrease in the microsclerotia in the soil using 9 tons of rice bran as our carbon source. Weed suppression has been found in areas with higher temperatures, but in our central coast region, ASD is not very effective on that. Depending on the carbon source we use, we can eliminate pre-plant fertilizer. And as you'll see, long-term suppression may be achieved in some cases and related to shifts in the microbial community. So this is just an example of the kind of field trials we did. This is from one of our highest producing fields in Santa Maria, where you can see the second column is the ASD treatment, and the last column is the PICLOR 60, And you can see that ASD yielded as high as the perchlor in this case. There was no synergistic effect with the other materials we were testing. But importantly, the net returns at the prices of fumigant and rice bran at the time were 96% of those with fumigation. And this is the only non-chemical alternative that comes close to the profitability that you get with fumigation. But it doesn't always work. And I always like to show an example of a failure. And here you can see at a trial in Watsonville in 2013, the rice bran ASD applied in the fall when we usually do it clearly did not control the disease. It slowed it down a little bit, but it didn't control it. And that was caused by Fusarium oxysporum. But interestingly, ASD has been shown to work in other places on Fusarium oxysporum. So the question is, why didn't it work for us? Which brings me to the underlying premise. If you're going to use biologically based control methods, such as ASD, then they're going to be much more influenced by environmental conditions and by the particular microbial and pathogen communities present in the soil than a fumigant is, for example. And so these methods are generally seen as less reliable and more risky, which can limit their adoption. Our argument is that if we can improve our understanding of what is causing the disease control and how those processes are affected by environmental and biotic factors, then we'll be able to better recommend how to do the technique for particular pathogens and particular contexts, and whether or not we think you've got a high chance of it working. So rather than trying to say this is a silver bullet that will work everywhere, we want to be able to provide more nuanced recommendations. So how does it work? Well, we know a lot of different things that happen that can control pathogens. We don't know which one works when for against which pathogen at this point. That's where we're trying to go. But during the ASD process, you get production of organic acids and volatiles that can be fungitoxic. If you get very deep anaerobic conditions, you get reduction of iron and manganese, which is also shown to be fungitoxic. We've documented with some carbon sources significant shifts in microbial community composition and in the numbers of bacteria and fungi to create a competitive or antagonistic environment. There's also obviously the lack of oxygen and low pH. Or it may be a combination of the above. And so the question is, how are each of these processes related to the suppression of particular pathogens? And how are each of these processes affected by the variables that a farmer can control? That is carbon source used, the level of soil moisture, soil temperature, and they can't control it, but we want to know if it's impacted by the initial microbial community present. So this sort of illustrates the interactions that we're interested in. The combination of carbon source, water content, and temperature will influence the rate of anaerobic decomposition, the degree of anaerobicity created, and hence then the production of the volatiles, organic acids, and the microbial community shifts. So I don't have time in 15 minutes to talk about each of these variables. So today I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of our work on the effects of different carbon sources. Early on, we tested a lot of different carbon sources in some pot studies and found that a wide range of materials were very effective at essentially killing off Verticillium dahlia, Michaelis-Gorosha in soil. Here you can see there's wheat bran, rice bran, ethanol, grape pumice, onion waste, mustard cake. All of them dramatically reduced the viability of the Microscorrhoea. And so for a while we thought that it didn't matter what carbon source you used. And growers were very interested in having a liquid carbon source that would be easier to apply. And so we tried out molasses. But this, you can see from a field trial, the molasses was much less effective than rice bran in the field. And we have an idea about why that may be. And part of it is that with the molasses, it's difficult to sustain anaerobic conditions for very long. It gets metabolized so quickly. It's a very simple carbon source. And here you can see that we see a dramatic reduction in EH, the redox potential, immediately after injecting the molasses, but within a day or so it's bouncing back up, and so then we applied some more and then it came back up after that. So that may be one of the issues with molasses, but as you'll see, there are some other questions as well. In contrast, when we tested grape pumice as another carbon source, because we wanted to find something in addition to rice bran that would work, and it worked very well, providing we provided pre-plant fertilizer. But it has a lower nitrogen content than the rice bran does. So that's why the pre-plant fertilizer would be necessary. So the carbon source can potentially have a lot of different effects. It can change the kinds of chemicals that are produced, e.g. the kinds of volatiles or organic acids. May affect the microbial populations that emerge. If you have a more complex carbon source versus a more simple carbon source, you may benefit different microbes. And that may in turn affect whether we have long-term shifts in the microbial community. So just to give you some examples of this, this is some work by my colleagues looking at the volatiles that are produced with different carbon amendments during ASD and how toxic those volatiles are against different pathogens. And you can see that not all, composted steer manure doesn't work at all. It's not an available form of carbon. But even within the available forms, there's some variation. The other thing that was interesting is that between the molasses and the rice bran actually really stimulates the numbers of microbes, both fungi and bacteria, in the soil, whereas the molasses didn't. And if we look at the genetic similarity of the fungal communities, you can see that only the ASD with the rice bran cluster separately from both the untreated control and the fumigants, but the ASD with molasses is indistinguishable from the untreated control. So we're not seeing the same microbial shifts. Whereas, this is a different way of expressing the data, but here we can see that the grape pumice did shift the microbes in a similar way to the rice bran. So I just want to show you a little bit of data from one large-scale field trial. It's an organic site, and this shows the field at the end of the season, and this field was heavily infested with Macrophemina and Fusarium. And you can see the ASD with the rice bran at 9 tons didn't completely eliminate the disease, but it certainly reduced it dramatically. And this grower had said that he regarded the demo as a failure unless I could increase his yields by 20%. 2 years in a row, we more than doubled his yields. So he's extremely happy. And the green bars show you the ASD with rice bran 9 tons. And you can see in both years, we've dramatically increased the yield and reduced the disease. The last point I want to make is about longer-term suppression. We found that those microbial shifts with rice bran last at least 9 months. And much to our surprise, in a rotation experiment, we found that you could actually still pick up the reduction in verticillium almost a year and a half after the ASD was actually applied. And this was following a winter cover crop and a lettuce crop, so with a lot of soil disturbance. So in summary, we still need to refine our knowledge what carbon sources work best for which pathogens. What I didn't get into was what are the soil temperature and anaerobicity requirements for suppression of each pathogens, and to understand more about how the microbial community changes affect suppression. But I'll stop now and hopefully have time for a question.
One question?
Yeah.
Well,
it really does depend on the pathogen. For verticillium, the fall works, and as long as we're at around 18 to 20 for at least the first week, it seems to work. With fusarium, data from Japan suggests you need about 30 degrees centigrade for it to work. And for verticillium, we need to accumulate 50,000 millivolt hours of anaerobicity below 200 millivolts. That's the threshold. We don't know what the threshold is for some of the other pathogens. So it's sort of this kind of detail that we're trying to fill out now.
Okay, thank you very much. That concludes viticulture.